From the Land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of October, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, and Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, not only for here in the United States, but we'll check in on the Black Sea, the Plain States for sure here in the U.S., because those two things are both related to dry weather conditions for wheat, and we'll talk about South America too, and it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today in Chicago down 3 cents at $3.79¾. The March at $3.89¼, 2¾ lower, and May 2½ lower at $3.94¾. July contract $3.98½ a bushel for the corn, 2½ lower, and next year's December down 2¼ at $3.91. November soybean settled 2¾ lower, $10.20¾. January at $10.24¾, 2½ lower, and the March beans at $10.18¾ down 2¼. July futures $0.01½ lower, $10.20¾, and next year's November soybeans, $9.70, up 3¾ cents. The bean oil futures 71 cents lower at $31.94. Bean meal at $3.49.40, up $4.40. December soft red winter wheat up 3 at $5.73¼. July the harvest month at $5.81, 4 higher, and the hard red July at $5.31, up 3½ cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago nearby October at $108.17½, down 35. December at $111.10, down 72½ cents per 100 pounds. October feeder cattle, $1.02½ lower at $139.90 in the October, and lean hogs at $74.50, up 35 cents for the afternoon. The outside markets trading crude oil down $1.57 a barrel. That's at $37.13. Ethanol futures about unchanged on the day at $1.39. Heating oil down 4½ cents at $1.08¼, and gasoline on wholesale price, the RBOB, at $1.12¼, $1.12¼. That's down just right at 3 cents for the afternoon. Natural gas at $2.45¼, 7½ cents lower. The Dow's around 26 points higher for the day. The dollar is up 0.108. Gold futures at $6.90 lower, $1,901.50 per troy ounce. And the S&P 500 today, and they're at 33.54. That's around 13 points lower for the afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael. Thanks for being with us.
A happy Friday to you, Todd, and thanks for having me.
It is a very nice Friday, a little gray, but, you know, it's the month of October and producers are in the field, so I'm sure they're very happy, and we've had quite a nice little rally. Part of that came courtesy of USDA's grain stocks report on Wednesday of this week. Why don't you give me your assessment of how that works into the upcoming WASD figures that will be released a week from today?
Well, that's a great question, because I think USDA's report turned October into maybe Rocktober, Todd. And I say that from a standpoint of between now and that WASD report, the supply reduction in corn specifically, not due to production, but due to the feed and residual number jumping. So we're not crystal clear on what exactly created this drop, but a drop nonetheless that the market will have to contend with for the next several months as we progress through what could be a very significant drought in both Argentina and Brazil. And their weather patterns are holding very dry in the case of Argentina, cold and dry in the case of Brazil, hot and dry for the next 10 days. Pardon the throat, I've been talking a lot on the phone this week. But for me, and what I've talked about the clients and written to the clients and subscribers about, has been excluding the news about President Trump and the First Lady contracting COVID, and we wish them the very fastest of recoveries. I think the biggest thing that we found from the report and the debate reaction in the marketplace was that the grains in particular were set up to try and not only test recent highs, but also maybe try and go through them. And in the case of corn, try and project up towards the major 2020 high, closer to that 390, 395 level in lead month futures. And if that's going to happen, my sense is right now is that the best likelihood is between now and the October WASDE report or right after, depending on what USDA gives us for numbers.
Yeah, so one other item that happened today was that Reuters, of course, was with Secretary Perdue, I think in Wisconsin, where he was asked about the Phase 1 trade deal with China and whether they would be able to meet the calendar year or $36 billion purchase agreement that was there. And he said probably not. On the flip side of that, soybean and even corn purchases by China have been leading the way in this marketplace.
They have, and I think the best way to look at this market, given what you just described, is for me, the macro, the U.S. dollar, the politics of the election, the energy policy of the election, factors that are coming in. To give you an example, after the debate on Tuesday night, a major global bank, wrote a note recommending to clients to buy gold as a safe haven to come in and protect potentially against a contested election. And so I think that we have dialed in the Chinese demand. It has not broken back at all, but I still fear that it could in the next several weeks, maybe several months. And that depends, again, upon whether the drought in South America lasts or not. Obviously, the Chinese are not going to want to cancel soybean purchases if they don't have a substitute to go to in 3 or 4 months and a crop's not looking good in South America. So I would broadly based say the demand side is on the macro at this stage of the game, unless USDA gives us something really strange in the WASDE report. The supply side is the grain stocks report, the weather, and we've got to balance those two together. And that's why I'm not buying the market here at these price levels, especially before the election, especially before the end of the year. I'd rather get hedges in place and use that sell and defend model again for the rest of the 20 crop, like I did the first part of the 20 crop, and then move on to the 2021 crop, where you lock in profit per acre as much as possible, and then you come back around and defend that if you see weather still an issue as we move into the post-harvest time period here in the United States.
You mentioned President Trump contracting COVID-19 with a positive test announced around midnight last night on Twitter by him. The marketplace seemed to hold really well together throughout a good portion of the day today, although you have to consider what that will mean longer term. Are there any expectations or any historical accounts that we can look back upon to see what this market may or may not do, given the considerations in Washington, D.C. at the moment?
Very few, in my opinion. I think the contrasting issue fundamentally that helped support the market in light of this news early on was the talk very late in the trading day that we would maybe get a stimulus bill back on track, and that seemed to flatten out the dollar. And obviously a stimulus bill would be focusing on the airlines, which would be energy intensive. We heard this week about Marathon cutting upwards of 12,000 employees. They're the largest refiner in the United States. This is where the rubber hits the road when it comes to the biofuel demand and the energy demand and the effects of COVID. What happens if we do not have a successful vaccination? And that's what the market's going to have to deal with if we don't have that, because I don't believe they're pricing that in. That's the demand side that I'm talking about. So I think these are the issues.
You don't believe they're pricing in a success? They are not pricing in a successful one? Or are they? What are they not pricing in at the moment?
They are not pricing in a failure of the vaccine at this stage of the game. Yeah.
At what point, though? Does it need to come by the end of the year, by the into the first quarter? Do you have a timeline?
Yeah, I do. I would say by the end of the year that we see on the horizon a vaccine being shipped out. It would. I clearly feel like that after the election is fine for the market, but shortly after the election, this goes back to the election in the fourth quarter, the livestock demand. What happens if we lose more restaurants permanently and airlines permanently? We got to factor this into our marketing plans.
How do you do that?
As I said, I think the best thing to do is look at the $600 $1,000 gross revenue per acre on beans. Look at the $750 gross revenue per acre on corn. That's $10 beans at 60 bushels per acre. That's 415 corn at 180 bushels per acre. Get those locked in and then come back around, spend some of that revenue to defend it in case we stay dry in Brazil and Argentina and the supply, the micro side, takes more precedent over the macro side. It's going to be that kind of a game this year, in my opinion.
So take the money up front, spend some money to defend the position you took.
Exactly right.
Anything else before I let you go for the afternoon?
Just have a great weekend, sir.
Mike Zuzulo is at globalanalytics.biz out of Atchison, Kansas. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world for this Friday afternoon. Just a quick reminder that if you're in the combine today, be safe out there. If you're working with those folks that are in the combine, you be safe too. In fact, I urge you maybe to take a little nap this afternoon. Go to sleep during this program if you want. 20 minutes will help you be safe. I guarantee it. It's one of the things that the professionals here on campus that deal with farm safety say is the most important thing for you to do. That, along with trying to get 8 hours of sleep each and every night. But a little nap in the afternoon will keep you refreshed right through the end of the day. And I know it's still probably quite a ways away for you. So make sure that you take some time for yourself. I want you to be safe out there in the combine and in the field. And if you're on the back roads traveling around rural America, watch out for those slow-moving vehicles. It's easy to come up on them very, very quickly at this time of year. I know the farmers are watching out for you and that you should be watching out for them. Now, one other safety note. You've heard me say this a couple of times already this week, but do mask up when you're in contact with people you normally don't see during the regular part of the day. And by that, I kind of mean the people that live in your house. So if you're going to be in an enclosed area or even outside within 6 feet of somebody, do put that mask on. It'll help you keep safe. I know three people that have had COVID-19 and all three recovered after several weeks, three mostly, of being down with the virus and just being terribly, terribly tired. You can't afford that to happen to you during the growing season, and neither can the folks that you work with and work for. So be sure to mask up. It's about the safety and the economy. On this Friday, we're joined by Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible to discuss the weather forecast. Hey, it was weird yesterday. Of course, I work from the home, and now I can hear what's happening outside sometimes. And for about 35 seconds, I got a rainfall. It was just sudden, and it had been sunshine. I looked out of the studio around the corner, so I could see the rain, but that thing just flew through here. What was up with that?
Yeah, it's a really neat thing. So there's a really deep upper level trough sitting over the Great Lakes right now. And it's what's responsible for the colder weather that we've got. So what happens is in the upper levels of the atmosphere, the temperatures, although they're already cold, they're getting colder as you go up very quickly. Turns out that is a way by which we can destabilize the atmosphere. So we actually had these cumuliform clouds, cumulus type clouds that popped up and produced very brief, intense rainfall. And they also produced some grapple, which is that soft, small, spongy-like hail that sometimes falls. So we saw some of that on campus, saw some of that all over the Great Lakes states, just embedded within that deeper upper level trough that's keeping us so cool right now. So yeah, it was a really neat event. It brought some brief downpours. But like you said, 30 seconds later, the sun pops back out.
Yeah, upper level cold, but it was cold last night here too.
Yeah.
Is that an indication of anything to come?
It is. Yeah, you're right. It did get pretty chilly. And we even had a pretty good frost in parts of the Western Corn Belt. So Nebraska, Western and Northern Iowa. In fact, in Western Iowa last night, they got deep into the 20s. So it was a cold night. But yeah, we do have more cold nights coming. And I think around here, the night I'm going to watch the most carefully will be into Monday morning. So Sunday night and Monday morning, looks like we're going to have our next shot at some colder air that might make our temperatures down into the low to mid 30s here. Likelihood of a frost in northern Illinois, eastern Iowa, and then Wisconsin is relatively high once we finish this weekend. So that is about 10 days early for us. if we do get a frost here, it's more like about a week early in northern Illinois. So it's not as though it's unprecedented, but this cold shot of air is going to stick around for at least another 5 days for us.
Do we get warmer after that?
We do. And before it gets warmer, we do have another brief chance of getting some rain over the weekend. So Saturday into Sunday, this little clipper system's coming out of Saskatchewan. It's going to cut through the northern plains and try to bring some light scattered precipitation in and around through Illinois. But after that, what happens out is there from there is the change in the west. So I'm looking out here now, October 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, that time frame, we're going to see a deep trough dig into the west. So just think about it like this. If it's going to get cool and wet, now in California, where they are desperate for rainfall, okay, then that means the jet stream is going to relax over us and our temperatures are going to rebound. And we're going to go back up to that, you know, those nice fall days that we all love to see. Good news is, I don't see much precipitation for us as we work our way into the month of October. And I hope that that means wide open harvest windows. Just one thing to comment on, with each of these little passing systems, it could kick up some pretty strong winds. So be prepared for that. But I think most of us recognize that just like March, October is one of those transition months that typically brings in some stronger winds.
Hey, back up for just a moment for mm-hmm. me. Did you say that California was going to get some rainfall?
Yeah, there's a pretty good chance that we could be seeing some decent rainfall amounts, the kind of rainfall amounts that stop fires. So we are all watching patiently to see how the models trend with that. Synoptically, meteorologically, the event that is coming through the western United States at that, you know, that again, it's like the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, that time frame is exactly what you want to see in order for there to be decent moisture out west. And so that's going to be probably the most important weather event, at least in the near term. We're going to watch in, you know, out west.
So I know you've been watching the tropics. Anything coming out of there that we should be aware of?
Absolutely. So right around the Yucatan Peninsula, there is a pretty well organized grouping of tropical thunderstorms. And those are usually the disturbances you need to start to get a tropical depression or a low pressure system to form. So I will be glued to satellite imagery all weekend long to see if this takes shape, because if that then moves into the Gulf of Mexico through the Bay of Campeche and gets into the Gulf, the ocean temperatures there are very warm. And should the trough that's over us now kick out into the Atlantic, it's kind of opening an avenue by which we could get that system to move possibly toward the Gulf Coast. When I say possibly, I want everyone to understand that I do not have a solid handle on this, and no one else does either at this point. But it's just one of those years where the tropics are ripe for making big storms. And remember, as we get into the second half of the hurricane season, it's the homegrown storm systems we worry about, those that come out of the Caribbean, the Gulf of Mexico, and right along the East Coast rather than off of Africa.
Can you come back to the Plain States for me for just a second? Because winter wheat needs to go in the ground. It's been dry there, and it's also been dry in Russia and parts of the Black Sea, Ukraine, I think, and they're having some difficulties getting winter wheat in there just because conditions aren't right to plant. Not that they couldn't, they're just not enough moisture around.
Yeah, the only place I think that's having good moisture for wheat right now is Australia. But you're right, the southern plains of the United States are very dry. There are a few places that have not measured precipitation in more than 2 weeks. And this is an area that wants to get in and get that winter wheat crop going and germinating before it starts turning cold. Unfortunately, the next 2 weeks does not look like much comes in there at all to really kind of relieve that. But that's why we're going to keep a close eye on what's coming out of California and also what's coming out of the Gulf of Mexico. Those two things could change the pattern up by middle of the month. So then you talk about the Black Sea. For the last almost 60 days, parts of southern Russia have been so dry that they're talking about in terms of percent of normal rainfall, we're talking 0 to 10%. And so they are also concerned about getting the crop in so that it can then get out of the ground, go dormant before, you know, your typical Russian winter comes and settles in that area. So yeah, the wheat market right now has those two areas to be watching very, very carefully.
South America.
Well, in South America, we're still waiting on the arrival of the monsoon. And I was intrigued this morning to see that what we call the zero Z runs from our model. So those are the ones run late last night. Showed up with some precipitation finally here in almost at the end of the second week of October, starting of the third week, moving into places like we all know, like Mato Grosso. Now, before all that happens, it's very dry and it is extremely hot. In fact, I watched a video of someone the other day that took a thermal camera out there and shot it on some bare ground and picked up a 57 degrees Celsius temperature of their bare ground under some of this heat. So we're talking about triple digit heat in Fahrenheit there. And so the problem is without the monsoon rains, they will not plant soybeans. And if we're still talking about delays by the time we get to the end of October for South America, then it is going to become a pretty big story, I think, for our markets and for what could possibly we could get out of South America. So I'll tell everybody, just watch it with me. Let's see how things progress. But also remember, when they get ready to plant crop down there, just like us in the U.S., they will go at it like mad. So when the window opens, they're going to plant fast and furious.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.